your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast. It's the day after Manchester United, the draw away at Newcastle, and a couple of days before our game against our big rivals down the East Lancs. With me from the Anfield Wrap podcast, very kindly has joined us, is Neil Atkinson. Neil, welcome.
Made up to be on.
United We Stand subscriber and reader.
Feel too sober for this podcast. It's not normally the way it goes. We're not the ones I've been listening to, but go on anyway.
Glad you like them. We've not been banned just yet anyway. But how's it going in the Anfield Wrap? Obviously, you've made some changes to what you've been doing in the last sort of 6 or 7 months.
Yeah, it's going well. I mean, you know, when we decided to make the changes, we're probably ahead of where we expected to be by now. And, you know, you can do a bit of corporate talking and all that sort of stuff. But we had an idea in mind as to how many people we thought would subscribe. And we're sort of, if you just said you'll be at this point by the end of the season, this season, then we'd be happy. So, you know, it's great that people are coming on board. But also it's the feedback that they get. You know, you can think, well, we're going to start doing, some weeks it's 13 shows. Mm. And you can start to think, you know, you can do 13 shows and, you know, you might start doing people's heads in. And I'm sure we do the odd person's head in, but on the whole, they're pretty upbeat about it. And the website's flying. You know, Gareth's now full-time working on editing it. So there's constantly stuff on there. And it's not just, you know, I've had this problem. It's quite funny, because, you know, it's quite different to a fanzine in that, you know, United We Stand, you get to do, when we were doing our mag, Steve Graves, who writes for The Echo and does stuff with us, did something brilliant on New Brighton Tower, and fundamentally people weren't that bothered. This is the thing I always add, you know, they were always like, well, yeah, that's all right, but what's going to happen with Joe Allen at the weekend?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, come on. But, you know, now on the website, there's a really good balance between sort of what's going to happen with Joe Allen on the weekend and then interesting stuff, sort of looking back, drawing parallels and all that sort of stuff. So, no, it's strength to strength to be overstating it, but, you know, we're happy.
It's a city that takes its football really seriously, I've always found, even probably more serious than the Mancunians tend to do it. But 13 shows a week, you're not getting bored with talking about stuff.
Well, we try to break them up. We try to have at least, you know, two in the week that are meant to just be a laugh. So there's at least two that are meant to be a laugh in there. And you know, you've done an AFQ where, you know, you'll do 45 minutes of an hour in AFQ and not do a single footy question. So that's good. And also the other ones, I mean, you know, I don't host them all, which helps. We break up who hosts which ones. But also, you know, it's talking about footy with your mates. What it does mean sometimes is that when you are actually in a position where you're with other mates and you start talking about footy, there is a thing, you know, sometimes going, you know what, lads, can we get onto music pretty quick here? I'm not that, there's only so much I can do on the Reds. Yeah,
we have a rule on our bus coming home that you're allowed 10 minutes post-match to talk about football. After that, you're banned.
That's a great rule. Yeah. I think it's... to be honest with you, maybe we should start having cards, like, and pull them out and go, right, you've got 5 more minutes now, boys, and this is it. It's ticking on. Off.
What's the fan culture like in Liverpool at the minute? Because, you know, we've talked a number of times about similarities and differences between sort of the two cities, and, you know, all of that's kind of been very, very well documented, especially to those that bother to educate themselves about it. But
yeah,
two very, very similar sort of supporter bases. Are you finding that the sort of same trials and tribulations and challenges that we have as supporters, are you seeing the same thing following Liverpool?
Yeah, I think we are. I think, you know, we have some of the lads from who were involved in Spying Cop 1906, and we do a lot of stuff with Jay McKenna, who I think, again, Jay comes and does the shows, and we tend to let him do the ones where he gets to have a laugh rather than the ones where he's got to talk about this, because everyone wants something a bit different. But when they come on and they chat to us, you know, there's There's issues around people being priced out. There's issues around people just sort of, you know, getting to the point where you feel as though you've got to, you've just got to jump through so many hoops. You know, there was all the nonsense around the flags on the cop this season, which all of it, every aspect of it, just felt endlessly avoidable by people just trying to be better people. You know, just making an effort to just presume the best of people once or twice across the course of the, you know, of everything that's gone on there, and not on the side of the lads who were just trying to create some atmosphere and put some flags in the cop. But I think in general, I think there's. I think Klopp's been good. Klopp's made a difference, and you know people were quite were a bit scathing around the thing he does post West Brom. But he knows what he's doing. You know when he goes to the crowd, he knows what he wants the crowd to do. He wants there to be more of an atmosphere. But we've got a fundamental problem, which is, and you know, I'm by no means, you know, I think at times when people like me and you talk about this, Steve, we can almost feel a bit like, well, it's, you know, we're pointing at everyone else, and that's not what I'm saying, because I'm about to say I think there's just not enough 16 to 24 year olds in that ground, and I'm 34 now. I'm going to be 35 in a couple of weeks, and you know. The idea that I'm the solution, you know, I'm still having a lot to drink around the game, and I'm still having a great time. But I'm you know, ways I'm giving it everything I've got. But week in, week out, I'm not going to do your 90 minutes screaming and shouting. And those lads are struggling to get in the ground, and they're struggling to sit together. And I think that's the issue.
I was at Newcastle last night, and I was looking around in the away end, and I reckon the average age in that away end last night was mid 40s. And they all looked mid-60s by the end of the evening. But is there a generation of youthful support around for Liverpool and clubs in general to pick up on? Because I fear for the game after the generation that I think we are.
Yeah.
After that, decides to call it a day.
I think it's dead weird, because I think that there is. I think, you know, I just remember my Martin, who contributed to our book after the season where we came second, and he cited in there, and I remember going to a few ways that season. He cited Cardiff away, where you were surrounded by young groups of lads and girls, and more girls than you'd think as well. And I think every now and again you'll go to an away, a Liverpool away, and you'll go, God, it's young here today. And it'll go off and it'll be great. And, you know, you'll just sort of, like, you know, I'll feel like one of the older ones. And then some weeks you'll go to an away. You know, Villa's a good one. You know, you go to Villa and everyone seems swept up by Villa. And it does seem to be a bit younger and a bit different. And then some weeks you'll go to an away from nowhere. And, you know, it'll just be basically people my age, your age. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I do think, though, that it is reaching crisis points. Just from the point of view of... But I don't know what you... I think it'd be easier for United to solve because of the size of ground. I think it's hard for Liverpool, because there used to be the thing, which is that you go on the cop, you stand on the cop, and that's a separate conversation, but you stand on the cop. And you like your football, and you get to a certain age, and you're a bit bored of standing on the cop, and you move to the sides. That's that. That's the way this works. But now you're in this situation where all the fellas who sit on the sides, they're just sitting on the sides still. They're not going anywhere. We can only have 45,000 people in there. Everyone who's standing on the cop, because if we're honest, the cop's a standing stand still now, you know, if we're honest. But those fellas who are in there, loads of them are in the 40s and 50s, and they've got nowhere they can move to. And would they even want to? Because they're trying to hold on to some sort of sense of youth. So,
what's the cheapest season ticket at Liverpool now?
Oh, I think it's expensive, the cheapest season ticket at Liverpool. I think it's about 650, to be honest. Mine was over 800, 900 quid.
Yeah, I mean, I've got ticket stubs from the sort of late 70s, early 80s, of first sort of 70 pence, 90 pence, you know, programmes for 30p. You just think about, your pocket money covered that.
Yeah,
today,
yeah.
Unless you're getting sort of near enough a ton a week off your parents, you're not going to get in that ground, are you?
No, but it's also, how can you get in, from Liverpool's point of view, how can you get in the ground? I have this a lot with Robbo when we're talking in the office, and me and Robbo have some arguments in the office about stuff, and Gibbo was sitting there and he has to act as a referee in the middle of some of them. But one of my things is Robbo wants to take his kids. But for Robbo to take his kids, the fella sitting next to him can't go.
Yeah.
And the fella sitting next to him wants to go. He wants to be in Anfield. Mm. And Anfield, because it's 45,000, it's broadly speaking made up of people who really want to be there, or who are just in the habit of being there. And I don't know how you get them out the ground. So the idea of, even if your 16-year-old saved up and wanted to do one game in four at Anfield, first, he can't sit with his mates because everyone's in their seats and they're not moving. Secondly, he can't actually get in that ground.
Yeah.
And... You know, I think it needs a massive, for Liverpool, and I think Liverpool sits, and I think that, you know, Liverpool being the way in which we are, because, you know, fundamentally, Steiner, I'm sure your listenership will agree, we're a gang of gobshites. We presume our problems are universal to all of football, but I actually think we sit sort of at the intersection of a lot of them. We've got issues around prices, everyone's got issues around prices, but we've got issues around access. And Everton haven't, and this isn't me being snide about Evertonians. Everton can sell a half-season ticket. Mm. Everton run a really good 16 to 24s, reduced season ticket. But one of the reasons why is because they don't sell out. So you're able to, you know, if the commercial imperative's on you to do that, then you do that. And so Liverpool, so we've got an access issue that I don't think, that certainly Everton haven't got, that United might have to a certain extent, but you can get 80,000 in. City obviously haven't got it because they don't bother selling out loads of the time. You know, there's all over the place up and down the country, there's loads of little pockets of issues, and I think we've got a lot of them. And then what happens is often when we start to talk about it, people must think, Christ, they don't have moan a lot.
Yeah.
But it's because there's not just one or two. A lot of them sort of pour in, and we're in the intersection of all of them. And I think that's dead hard for the football club as well to fix. You know, let's be honest here, not football full stop, struggling with all this. Mm. Every club struggling with it. And Liverpool sort of sits at the intersection of tons of these problems. And then everyone says, well, why can't they get that sorted out? Well, they're not a big business.
Football's money used to come through people paying to come through the turnstiles. Now that's such a small proportion what a club's income is. So it's not, clubs aren't actually that bothered anymore.
No, but then the other side of that, though, is therefore, well, think about it from the product point of view. What's one of the things, you know, you mentioned your game last night. I watched your game on the telly, and one of the things I liked was you felt the Newcastle crowd in the second half. You felt them come alive. And then when Rooney scores the third and he's going, you know, you can see who it is that he's talking to, and you can hear that noise from the United end. And so therefore, I think, well, we can fix this. If you want to just go, well, you know, the money's coming from elsewhere and you're not that important, well, that's great. Well, surely then that's the first sentence that solves the ticket price problem. Then we get that one sorted and we move on to the next one, whatever the next one is. But instead, I think the problem is that everyone's football clubs are in this really weird position where I just don't think there's that many visionaries knocking around who can grab the whole of them and say, let's just box this. Because it's in our interests too. It's in our interests to keep this going. Instead, there's a lot of people who've got to justify, you know, and without talking about your issues with your owners, if, let's say, Ian Ayre decides to make a big decision in Liverpool, well, he can't. He's got to run it past Boston. And in Boston, they're going to want to see the spreadsheets. They're going to want to see this. And he can be going, but the feeling on the ground, well, you can't measure the feeling on the ground. And so I think that becomes a problem as well. So it's, as I say, I don't think it's easy, but yeah. I just think it doesn't take that much.
Yeah, it was interesting last night for all you say about the Newcastle crowd. It was 48,000 there last night. The ground holds 53, 54.
Really? Didn't sell out?
First time I've ever been there against United when it didn't sell out, which I thought was quite interesting. Obviously, that sort of brings us on nicely to your ground expansion, which is going to be ready in next season, the season after.
Yeah, they think next season.
Next season.
Either during next season or maybe even by the start.
I mean, obviously, it's about time from your point of view. Is that going to... I mean, two questions I've got on this is, is it the right thing to do to redevelop Anfield? From a total perspective as opposed to the emotional attachment that you've got like we have with Old Trafford. Is it the right thing to do? And is that going to help the sort of ticket price and the access situation?
I don't think it's going to help the ticket price and the access situation, this first one, because a lot of it's going to go corporates. So I think, and you know, I trust that Liverpool have done the research and feel as though they can shift those corporate tickets. So I don't know if it helps the ticket price and the access situation. I'm very mixed on the Anfield question, and I don't know what the right answer is, and I think it's one of those situations in life where I don't think there's the right answer. For a long time, I thought we'd move, and then when I thought we were going to stay, I was like, yeah, that's the right thing to do. Now, again, if you felt that there was someone, you know, if there was a Bill Shankly in the balls room running Liverpool who put together a plan to say, this is what we're going to do, we're going to go here, and it's going to be like this.
Yeah.
You could go, right, I believe in this fella, I believe the way this fella's looking at the football club, that's the right thing to do. The idea that that's happening with the current ownership and the current hierarchy, without having that strong an opinion on them, I think they're broadly speaking all right, and they've broadly speaking got the football club's best interests at heart. But I don't trust them to go and do a mammoth project for the long-term future of Liverpool and get it right. So, to be honest, it's this really weird situation where it's probably the best possible outcome at the moment, but on the whole, there could be other ones, but it needs other people to be involved.
What's this going to take your capacity to? 55?
55, yeah.
And what do you think is the demand? What could you fill, do you think, realistically, sort of week in, week out?
I think we could fill up to 70, but we'd have to be clever with price and season tickets and so on. I think we could quite comfortably fill to 70, but we can't get 70,000 people in and out of the area of Anfield with the current transport issues, parking, links, the whole thing. This is one of the reasons why I don't see us going past 60, because I don't think, unless Liverpool stump up money to some degree to be part of a transport infrastructure question, then I don't see the council allowing it, because it's a nightmare.
I can't see how that's going to be that can pan out full stop. It was easier for United to do it because of where it was on an industrial plot of land. It was impossible for City to do it, and I don't know any City fans who wanted to leave Main Road, and I now don't know any City fans who would go back.
Yeah,
And it's almost like they've kind of seen now that they've done it, that it was absolutely the right thing to do.
Exactly, and I think that it could be that if we did it, we did it the right way, you'd come out of it and you'd go, yeah, that was the right thing to do. But you've got to be sure about these things, obviously, because there is no going back. Once you do it, there is no going back. But and it's back to the idea, as I say, if there was someone who was coming in and he was running Liverpool and he was able to say, right, this is how we're going to sort these problems out. As, on the whole, all these problems are solvable like this, 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 this and this, then I think you could turn around and go, yeah, I can get that. As it is, as a football club, you just sort of feel as though, and this isn't me being snide, because this is how I think the vast majority of football clubs are run, but you feel as though as a football club, we just sort of, we're lasting season to season. We're planning at most 2-3 years ahead. I don't think there's anyone who's sitting down in Anfield in sort of a David Dean-ish way and going, right, this is what the next 15 years looks like. Because, you know, not least because it wouldn't surprise me, I don't know anything, I haven't heard anything, but in the way in which everything is always for sale, to some degree, Liverpool's for sale at the moment. Yep. You know, the right offer came in, they'd go, yep. And then it'd need people with. But then whoever it is that they'd sell to, would they be the people with vision? I don't know.
On a more positive note for you guys, it seems as if the new manager's someone who's got settled in quickly, not so much in results, but he does seem to have sort of got straight into the culture of the club. And are we right to see that from the outside?
Yeah, I think so. I think first and foremost, he comes across like a good man. He comes across like, you know, he's not a careerist. I think it's really important. There's two sides to this, really, which is that we can praise him to the skies, but he didn't have to take the Liverpool job. He wants to be here. You know, he didn't quite have the pick of any football club in the world, but he wasn't far off. And all they had to do was be patient. And, you know, he could currently be, you know, he could have got the Chelsea job. The Real Madrid job's just come up and gone. If he hangs on till the end of this season, there's probably another two or three jobs knocking around world football that he could stick his hand up for, not least the Bayern Munich job.
Yeah.
You know, but he doesn't want that. And I spoke to a fellow who wrote a book about Dortmund last season on one of our shows. And he said, he interviewed Klopp at the end of the season for this book. And he said to Klopp, you're going to go to Munich, aren't you? And Klopp went, no. And he went, you are, you're going to go to Bayern Munich. And Klopp went, I'm not interested, I don't want to do that. And so I think it's important, firstly, to say this, that Jürgen Klopp isn't doing Liverpool a favour. He's here because he wants to be here.
Yeah.
I think that's great simultaneously, because he can see the long term benefits for it. So I'm really looking forward to the next couple, 2-4 years with the fella, and I do think it will be that length of time. I don't see him just coming and going. I don't think that this is him coming here. I don't think he's this sort of person to then position for the next move. I think he did 7 years at Mainz, he did 7 years at Dortmund. I think he'll end up doing 7 years at Liverpool if the results are what they need to be. I think he's been a bit surprised by a few things. To be honest with you, I think you can tell people and you can show them videos of what it's like to play Tony Pulis as West Brom.
Yeah.
And then you can see it, and that's something quite different.
I think you see a culture with a lot of overseas managers in early doors. They always seem to do well in the bigger games, and it's almost like they underestimate the lower end teams. And it's almost like, because I think, I don't subscribe to this theory that the Premier League is the best in the world. I think the top four in our league are pretty poor in comparison. Yeah. But I think the bottom four in the Premier League would probably be most other leagues.
And the middle teams as well. I think this season that's been the kicker for us this season. West Brom, sorry, well, West Brom are middle league. Watford, West Ham, these lads, these teams are the ones that have really, that have surprised. I think they've surprised Klopp, and I do think it has been a surprise. I think people can tell you what it's like to deal with West Brom, and then you face it in a football match, and it's really quite different. And I think he's had that over and over again. In many ways, it's frustrating, because this season we know, I think Liverpool supporters broadly speaking know that, for a variety of reasons, it'll be, if not a freak event, we need the stars to align for us to win this title that we need to win. And this year is the stars are aligning season, and we're nowhere near, because for a variety of reasons. So that's the negative. But the positive is, I actually think it helps him to have this season in the way in which he's got it as sort of a, you know, coming in October, because he's getting to see everything. He's getting to see all of his plays. He's getting to weigh everything up. He's getting to understand what the fixture list's like. You know, it's important to remember, he gets 6 weeks off in Germany in the middle of the season. Yeah. And as much as that clears the players' legs and recharges their energy, it actually clears managers' heads. Yeah. You get to sit down, you get to do your planning again, you get to say, well, what's worked and what hasn't. The fella, honestly, he just looks like he's going from game to game, like he gets in the car and drives to the next one at the minute and turns up and says, well, who are we playing today then? You know, he seems like a pretty, you know, when he says, I haven't watched the videos yet at West Ham. He hadn't watched the videos yet at West Ham. He's not lying. He's, I've been dealing with Sunderland, then I've been dealing with West Ham, then I'm dealing with Stoke, then we've got 3 days. So I think the more...
He's going to have to do that though soon, isn't he? Otherwise he's going to get left short pretty quickly.
Oh, he's going to have to. He's going to have to start rotating more and more. I thought you saw it in the Exeter game, and I think he's going to have to. He's, well, I think, but I think this, what this tells him is in Germany it's 34 league games, no real League Cup to speak of, and this winter break that they get, and also they don't do replays in cup games. Here he is managing Liverpool. He's been plunged into a Europa League campaign. They're not the best. He's got a League Cup run that he's part of. He's got the FA Cup to deal with, and there's no winter break. Well, he's going to know now going into next season, and it's quite interesting. Before the Bournemouth game, he was given it all. The most important game's the next one. Before the Exeter game, it became no. He's already beginning to come to those conclusions. Yeah. So I think, in a sense, I think this helps us going into 16-17. If Rodgers had limped through until the end of the season, the same swap had happened, then I think you would have had the season of Klopp not quite knowing what sort of planning he's got to go through, whereas now he's got no excuses. He knows exactly what he's got to get them in shape for.
From a playing point of view, who's stood out for you this season? And I guess it's someone who's probably not ended up in A&E like the rest of your squad. But
I think that the player who had, you know, because he's split opinion, not least mine, I've always said he'll become a player to some degree, but it might not happen for Liverpool, or it might take a bit longer. But Emre Can's done well. He's grown into it, and he was quietly impressive at Stoke away in the League Cup, in that he had a quietly effective game.
Yeah.
There's been loads of Emre Can games where he's desperate to do the big thing, to do this, you know, and to do your head in, to do the thing that does your head in from a central midfielder, where he's trying to boss it, trying to absolutely, you know, play the big ball, be the big man. And he was just quietly effective against Stoke. And I think over the last 2 months, he's grown game by game. He was excellent against Leicester on Boxing Day, paired up next to Henderson. That was his best game for Liverpool, but probably his most understated game was the Stoke game. So I think he's worthy of a shout out. The fullbacks have done all right. But it's been so, everyone's so in and out. You know, I think every game Henderson's played, he's really impressed me this season. Really, really genuinely proper, big centre mid performances, full of energy, full of ideas, full of trying to make it happen. Got a couple of goals to his name as well. He's been really impressive. But I'm talking about the lad who's played 6 games. You know, this is the problem. Lallana's done well, but there's not enough end product. Coutinho's been very hot and cold. So, but he's not even going to be available for the United game. It's almost irrelevant in a sense.
He's some talent in him, though, isn't he?
He's a huge talent, but he's not. Under Rodgers and under Klopp, he's constantly made to play as a forward, essentially in the front line or just behind the front. And I think he's a midfielder. I think he's a lad who just wants to pick it up deep, maybe take a couple of plays out of the game. He's not David Silva. You know, he's not quite got the goal return for that. He might grow into that, but he's not quite got the goal return to be the fella who plays close to the front. But also, I just think he does a lot of his best work with three players ahead of him who he can try and feed. And too often under Rodgers and under Klopp, he's been one of the three. And he's not quite got the pace to be that player. He's not quite got the physical presence. And that's something which has hurt Liverpool across a number of positions this season. That said, we can play some really, really good stuff. We've got Arsenal. We're doing this before the Arsenal game. Arsenal United, it wouldn't surprise me if we got 6 points. It wouldn't surprise me if we got 1 point. We are, you know, we're very capable of putting performances in. You know, the 4-1 at City, it was a bit of a shock to a lot of people. It wasn't that much of a shock to me. It was great, but it wasn't. It didn't make me go, I absolutely didn't see that coming. You could see how he can set a side up, and you've said it before, he can set a side. He knows how to beat Man City. We're playing Arsenal tonight. Well, Dortmund have beaten Arsenal. I'm relatively confident he's got a plan to deal with this, because he's actually played against Arsene Wenger's Arsenal. And the way in which he sets his sides up, the first thing he wants is that the lads work. They follow his instructions and they work, and they do seem to do that whoever they face.
Is he likely to do much in January, transfer-wise?
He's brought Colker in now on loan. I think he doesn't want to. I think he wants to see everybody before he... Again, I think he sees this. And this is where the shift has been a bit frustrating, in a sense, and this is not a criticism of the manager. I think the manager's seeing this as, I come in October and I've got till June 2016 for this to become serious. Yeah. Whereas I think the reality was, there was something that could have been done this season from a Liverpool point of view. You'd have needed luck, you'd have needed everyone fit, maybe a better transfer market in the summer just gone. But there was a possibility of something, and so. But I think he didn't want to do anything now in January. He's had to bring Colker in. I think he might try and resist doing anything else. I think if a good player becomes available and we can get them, we might move for him. But I think broadly speaking, he'll want to look at everyone, give everyone the full duration. But then it wouldn't surprise me if there was sort of 5 out and 5 in next summer.
Do you think there'll be any outs in Jan?
Enrique, if we can find a taker, but you know, not everyone needs a social media expert. there was talk that there might be a bit of stuff around Joe Allen, but Joe Allen was excellent at Stoke. He really was excellent at Stoke. So I think he might, I think he might just stick with everyone, go right the way through until the end. We're in a really weird position with injuries, because the injury situation, it's not, the problem isn't just that there's lots of injuries, it's that they're all coming back, they're all getting rushed back, and they're all picking up new knocks. It's looping round. And I think he's, but also I think what he's asking them to do, I think he's seen now, you know, you look at that Christmas period, we had Leicester at home, Sunderland away, West Ham away. We took 6 points. We're great for 70 against Leicester. We should be 3-0 up. We should be home and hosed. We end up winning the game 1-0. We go to Sunderland. We're not quite as snappy, but we should score early. Eventually we get the goal. They don't really scare us. We get the 1-0. Then we go to West Ham, and they do us. And they do us, and they've done us early for a variety of reasons. It was one of them where, you know, you've sat through a load of them in your life, where we go 1-0 down, and as soon as we've gone 1-0 down, you know we're losing this game.
Yeah.
There's no, it would be remarkable if we got back into it. And for whatever reason, Liverpool haven't turned up that day, but the reason why is the mental and physical toll of going bang, bang, bang. But that's partially because of the injuries he's got to do that. So I think he wants 18, 19, 20 of them. Mm. And it wouldn't surprise me if whatever side he picks against Arsenal, you see 4 or 5 changes now for the side against United to keep them sharp and to keep them fit.
Yeah, you say I've been to lots of games like that in my life. I've been to lots this season. which brings me around to, what do you make of the situation at United at the minute? Because it's pretty mind-boggling, isn't it, how all of that talent at a club of that size can be in such a mess.
Yeah, it's one of the things that reminds you that football's football, to be honest with you, in that, you know, I think that this is why football's not rugby. You know, rugby, the best side tends to win. They turn up, they've got whatever it is, the stats that rugby players have got, they turn up, and one side just is able to say, well, we're superior, and eventually it breaks for them. Football's football, and you know, you can be stopped. I think it's a bit of a, again, like with Liverpool, I think it's a bit of a sort of a confluence of events, in that because West Ham, Watford, these sides this season, Crystal Palace, because they're all quite strong, that group of sides are arguably stronger than they've been for a fair few years. I think where United have had problems, and Liverpool for that matter, is if you're slightly off your game, they'll do you. And I think there's been a lot of games where United, in seasons past, if they'd have turned, I think now, you know, I used to think you can play a lot of these games at 90% and come away with a 2-0. Now, for Liverpool United, whether it's the amount of quality they've got in their squad or what the opposition do, you know, you've got to be at 100%, you've got to be on it. And I think that the other thing is as well, is that people rightly perceive vulnerabilities. You know, you just got to look at Chelsea this season. Mm. What's happened is quite early on, loads of sides have gone, we can have these. Mm. And that really makes a difference. That's happened to United and it's happened to Liverpool. So I think that's happened. And I think that up until last night, the game against Newcastle, we could just have said he was playing, you know, he's playing very conservative football, and that might... I don't know what, me and you have talked about this a lot, we don't know what remit he's been given from the United board, and if the remit he's been given to the United board is just get in the Champions League and we'll take it from there, we might bring another fella in and get rid of you, but just get to the keep us in the Champions League, that's your job, then it might be that the best path to do it this season is to be boring, is to, you know, is to have really tight games, all that sort of stuff. It might be that in the end, it all clicks for you to a certain degree. You'll end up on your 72 points and you're sitting third or fourth, and he'll get to go, well, that was that. He can say to himself and to his team and to, you know, to the people above him, that's what you wanted, that's what you've got. But that's no laugh for people who are going through the turnstiles. And again, it's this idea that there's these disconnects, not least because the United board aren't going to come out and say, well, you know, he's doing exactly what we want him to do. They're not going to, in terms of the approach.
It's interesting because supporters are giving him pure grief. The media is giving him pure grief. Even Adidas have come out and said,
yeah,
we're selling shitloads of shirts, but hey, the football's rubbish. Everyone bar his employers seem to be putting the knife in, and United don't seem to want to panic.
No, because I think they think he's going to get a third or fourth, and I think they may well be proven right. Mm. I mean, I think they're looking at it thinking he'll just put a run together. He'll put two runs together between now and the end of the season where United have been 4 out of 4. And then when they've won those fours out of fours, and they'll put the 24 points on the board there, if he just keeps doing what he's doing elsewhere, then it's 72, 75 points. He might end up, you know, 4 games to go and a sniff in with a sniff if it's going to be an 80-point season for the title. Yeah,
people forget, Moyes, in prior to the game against Everton, he won 5 of the previous 7 before he got sacked. 2 crushing defeats against Liverpool and City. Van Gaal went 8 without winning. against really low level opposition. So he's, you know, he's United have had every right to probably say, look, mate, this isn't working, and they haven't done.
No, exactly. And I don't think he's going anywhere. I think they're going to do everything they can to keep him to the end of the season. I'd be amazed if he's still in position at the end of the start of next season. Not least because if I'm United, I'm looking at that going, there's a real chance here. They might have had this idea that it might take us 3 or 4 years to get back on top. But I think if you look at next season, City are going to bring Guardiola in. That might bring its opportunities, but they may well surge ahead. But Arsenal are still going to be Arsenal. Liverpool are likely to be at best Liverpool plus. And Chelsea have got a big rebuilding project to do. So it might be that, you know, they might be thinking, if he just gets us in the Champions League, we can attract some players. We can have, bar Guardiola, realistically, our pick of the managers. Because, for instance, I think Simeone makes much more sense as a Manchester United manager than as a Chelsea manager. I think it's an easier sell to him. You know, going to the big thing, the grand thing. I think it's quite a. I think it's a real. I think it's that interesting in a really dull way, because you're having to put up with the football. I think the intrigue's the interesting part.
God, we are having to put up with the football. I've never drank so much, and that's saying something. What can we expect this week, and then in terms of the... obviously, it's still the biggest game in this country, isn't it?
Yeah, by a mile. All the football that matters in this country happens in the northwest. That's the beginning, middle and end of it for me. I say that all the time. It annoys people, but it's true. I think there would be ripples if Arsenal won this league this season. But, you know, when Chelsea won it last season, no one's bothered.
Yeah.
No one cares. And it kills them. But it's because, you know, there's another way to look at it. It's because there's other things going on in London. Mm. You know, football matters in the northwest. It matters. And if the northeast was a hotbed, you know, if one of them was doing well, then it, you know, go back to... There was lots of talk this week of Newcastle versus United going back 20 years. They'd be talking all about that as well. You know, but the football that matters happens in the northwest. What to expect from it? I think a lot of it's going to be impacted by what happens with Liverpool against Arsenal. And now I don't know quite what to expect from United after the Newcastle game. You know, is Van Gaal going to think? And I think it's probably throws a bit of a spanner for Klopp, because I think it would have been easy to think United are going to do a lot of sideways stuff, try to take the sting out of the game, maybe look to do what they did last season, maybe start Fellaini, create 3v3s on the pitch in little areas of the pitch, which is what they did brilliantly last season when they came to Anfield, win those battles, and then go from there. Are they going to try and do that, or are they actually going to try and come and play some football at Anfield? And I still think they're more likely to do the former, because I don't think it's a game the manager wants to lose. But if they did the latter, you know, it would possibly play into Liverpool's hands a little bit more. So that's one of the reasons why, again, I think he'll do the former. I think it'd be a tight game. I think, and the other X factor in this is Liverpool's selection. I don't know when this is going to go out, but it would not surprise me if Daniel Sturridge starts either of these games. If from nowhere Daniel Sturridge plays either of these games. I don't think he'll play in both, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's just parachuted in and starts one of them and then isn't on the bench for the other. Mm-hmm. And that would be a massive, massive game changer for Liverpool. Behind that, you've got Lallana, you've got Firmino. I think Benteke can do something, no shadow of a doubt about that. Henderson may not start them both, might start one. Which one does he start? Sacco won't start them both, which one will he start? It's really difficult to second guess how the game's going to go, because forget the idea of, I don't know what Man United are going to do, I don't know what the Liverpool team's going to be. But what I do think is it'll be tight, it'll be cagey. Neither side's got quite enough goals in them, got quite enough goal scorers in them, I think is fair to say. And I think it'll be decided by something in the last half an hour. And I think that's where the fact that it's at home, I think, plays more into our hands. But that's where, if Van Gaal was sitting here, he'd be saying, but we've had a day's more rest, that plays more into our hands. So I think it's a bit up in the air. I expect it to be... The one thing I think it might be is it might be more blood and guts than it's been the last few years. It wouldn't surprise me, again, if there's a few thrown in from someone on either side, on both sides. It wouldn't surprise me if there's a few thrown in and there's a bit more we're going to get about you than there's been, because I think that's what Klopp will want. And I think that Van Gaal, for all he's painted as being a certain type of manager, I think he'll want them forward. And I also think that the one thing that concerns me about the game is if Rooney is getting himself into a little bit of form,
because, which he is,
yeah. So that's
the Rooney thing was interesting, because I saw a different Wayne Rooney in the second half at Stoke when he came, and it was almost like, because he was dropped, it was almost that was a kick up the arse that I'm a captain and I've been dropped here. And since then he's been by some distance, like, not, he'll never be the old Wayne Rooney, because he's sort of 16, 17 years into his career now, but you know, he's getting back towards that. But for me, the two people that are key for me are if Mata and Herrera take their form from Anfield last year, into that game, that could be a big, big moment for United.
Well, the matter, I think it's probably fair to say, if Mata plays, then I think that United have probably got the best footballer on the pitch, whoever either side starts.
He's out of form.
Sorry?
He's badly out of form.
If he's badly out of form, then it's a different kettle of fish. But in terms of, you know, just simply if you rub them down, strengths and weaknesses, what they're good at. For me, Mata, you know, would be the best pure footballer on the pitch. I think it's a game, if Henderson can do one of these two, I'd have him do United. And I'd probably, if I was setting Liverpool up now, off who I think is likely to be available and fit, I would go for a side that's something like Mignolet in goal. I'd go 4-4-2, and I'd go Mignolet in goal. I'd go Kleiner right back, Kolke, Sacco. I wouldn't play Sacco against Arsenal, and I'd go Moreno at left back, and then I'd just go off the right. Well, on either flank, some combination of Lallana and Milner. And I'd be having I'd be putting Chan and Henderson in centre midfield. I'd rest Lucas for this. I'd be playing him against Arsenal, and I'd go Benteke and Firmino up front. And I'd look to do to United what we looked to do to Leicester, which was play very, very quickly out of the centre of midfield, pull them up the pitch, and just turn them around and hit them and stretch them and channels, and they get up the pitch and try to create an intensity about the performance, because I think the longer it goes and becomes a last 20 game, I think that will just suit Van Gaal, and I think it'll suit whatever it is he's got on the bench, because I think he'll be looking and he'll feel as though he can just turn it one way or another.
The one thing Van Gaal said that always rung with me when he came into the game was he was quite scathing about English players, saying they play with the hearts and not the heads, and games where he gets the players to use their head, we do tend to do all right, and we just don't do enough of that. And he got players to use their head last year at Anfield.
Yeah.
And I think he's got to try and get some out of that.
But I think the way Klopp wants to be and the way Klopp is he just wants to, Klopp likes emotional football. He used that phrase quite a lot, emotional football. So it could well be that that's what it turns into. United trying to be ice cool, and Liverpool being absolutely limbs and hearts pumping, and seeing if they can, certainly for the first 20 minutes, half an hour, seeing if they can turn United around. And I think that'd suit. I think it'd suit the fact that we're at home. I think if we can do a bit of that, and as I say, I'd if, you know, looking at the likely the lads who can only do one game, you know, one of these two games that we've got, that's the way I'd look to do it. That's where I'd pour those resources, and I'd look to just get United doing a lot of the things they don't want to do, which is
shoot, well,
which is having to come onto Liverpool a little bit, and then it becomes where Van Gaal's probably trying to say to them, or someone saying to them, don't get sucked up. But it's part of football. You get sucked up the pitch, you can get sucked up the pitch, and I'd be looking to do that. And then absolutely, you know, I can't, it's difficult to put over, and certainly because, you know, your listeners will think it's a Liverpool supporter doing hyperbole because he's Liverpool captain, it's difficult to put over how effective and good Henderson was against Leicester, how quickly he shifted the ball around the pitch, how he played a first time pass that was an interception that released Lallana, 3-1 goal. It was that from inside his own half. It was that territory of, but clearly that's the manager's instruction. As soon as you get it, it goes. You're just looking to feed. I think that's what I'd be looking to do against United.
He did look a twat in those Nivea adverts, though, didn't he?
which isn't good. Scales the worst one for me and them.
Come on, before I get a score prediction off you, what's your match day going to be then? Out early? Home late?
Out early, home very late indeed. Yeah, I think you know the Sunday suits us down to the ground for this one. I think so. Out from 10-11.
It's a good booze now, Liverpool, isn't it, as a city centre?
Oh yeah, you can have a great drink in Liverpool. You can have everything's walkable and everything's possible. So we'll be doing that, and then game. I'll have to come back to a show quick afterwards, and then out, hit the karaoke in the lesbian bar.
Quick score prediction then to wrap us up. What's a good result for Liverpool, and do you think you'll get it?
I think the only good result for us is a win, and that's not to say that, you know, the game situation might be, you know, if we're down to 10 or whatever, you know, you'd take a draw on 70. And I think we can all do the talk in the rooms beforehand and say, you know, you'd only want to win if it's when the football match is happening in front of you and your heart's pumping and you're thinking, I don't want to get beat by these bastards. You'd probably take a draw on 70 most of the time anyway. But I think we will win. I think we'll take 4 points from the two games, and I think we'll probably get a 2-2 or something from Arsenal. They're almost like a two-legged encounter, these two, because of the way it's come. So I think we probably get a point against Arsenal, and it'll be competitive and hot and a tough point. And a 2-2 and 2-1 wouldn't surprise me across the two games.
Well, I hope you're wrong.
Sorry, what's yours?
I think last night changed. Again, I'm like you. I think we'll see what happens to you tonight. I don't think a draw is good for anybody, which I think is going to make for probably the type of game no one thought it would be.
Yeah.
So I think, and you know, I think let's be realistic about it. I think man for man, United are a better side. But it then becomes, how is that side sent out? And it'll be a case of which manager wins this, not which side. And it will be a case of, it's an unknown quantity for Klopp, because this, I think, is going to be, I think he'll be, I think he's embraced the fan culture in Liverpool, but I think he'll be really shocked at the atmosphere in that ground for this game, because I think he'll go, this is louder than anything I've heard in this ground before.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's a possibility that that I think that will just raise. We were talking last night on our podcast, and we were sort of saying that the fact that that ground's going to be absolutely bouncing, the United are now going there under pressure. And a couple of lads on ours were saying Klopp really can't lose in this situation. He's got nothing to lose whatsoever. So, you know, the pressure is absolutely on United more than it is on Liverpool, we think. So, and it's whether they can handle that. Would I take a draw all day long?
Yeah.
To keep our unbeaten run since Boxing Day going.
I think
it will be a draw. I think if we do get beat, I think then that one defeat will probably increase more pressure on Van Gaal than that 8-game unbeaten run, because of the significance of who it's against.
Okay. I can completely see that. I think, and I take your point, I think there's something to remember here from a Liverpool point of view as well, which is, you're right to point it out, Klopp, he's done a City away, he's done a Chelsea away. Firstly, the nearest thing he's had to a big Liverpool home is Leicester on Boxing Day. He hasn't had Everton home or away. Mm. He hasn't had United home or away, and they are different things. And I wonder whether or not the things that will suit him in terms of the sort of manager he is. It comes back to whether or not you do whether or not you win these games through emotion or through being sort of ice cold in key moments. And I think we can list examples of either way of winning if you just look, you know, if you just go absolutely down the list. So I don't know. I think I'm intrigued. I'm really, to be honest with you, I can't quite put over, and what I'd want to put over for people, how much I'm looking forward to these two. The idea that they are back to back. I'm really looking forward to Anfield tonight. Got an afternoon's drinking planned around it now, and I'm really looking forward to I'm really looking forward to getting to United on Sunday. Just because the one thing that Klopp sort of being able to do, whether rightly or wrongly, is that it's more of a laugh going to Anfield, but also I don't feel the pressure of, because it looks like, you know, it's practically impossible for us to, you know, to certainly do anything where first place is concerned now. You just sort of feel a bit like, well, we're all learning stuff at the minute. You know, I thought Exeter away was great for us in terms of the fact that you got to learn something about these young lads. We're all going the match as a laugh, and I think that it can really be a laugh across these two. That said, if we ship four to Arsenal tonight, it'll be no laugh on Sunday.
Yeah, you want to try shipping six to City and trying to laugh about things like that. That doesn't happen. Neil, appreciate your time, mate.
No problem.
Have a great drink on Sunday evening.
You know, we will. Win, lose or draw. We had a great one last year.